so that we can be as efficient as possible with our time. Honourable members, the first presentation will be by Budget Justice Coalition. Can I see who's here? Budget Justice Coalition.
Chairperson.
Yes, Darren.
All the presenters are present.
Sorry, before that, are we having any apologies from the secretaries?
Yes, Chairperson, from appropriations. Mr. Saropen is busy with online classes with the university, and then Ms. Ntlangwini is attending an organizational meeting.
Thank you. From the Select Committee.
From the Select Committee. For that, Chair.
Yes, yes. Sorry, Honorable Kaiso.
Lubabalo.
Yes, Honorable Dipuo is still struggling to come just to take for the meeting to take note of
that. I don't know if you can hear Lubabalo.
Okay. Thanks. Noted, Honorable Kaiso. Lubabalo, any apologies from the Select Committee?
Yes, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Chairperson. We have got two apologies from the Select Committee on Appropriations, Chair. It's Mr. Moletsane, Chairperson, and Mama Rakgane.
Thank you so much, Lubabalo. Then I'll request Budget Justice Coalition to start with their presentation.
Chairperson, I'm just uploading the presentation.
Okay. Please do. While you are busy uploading, who's from Budget Justice Coalition? So that
Ms. Zukiswa Kota.
Ms. Kota, please can you introduce yourself so that you see you on the screen while Darren is trying to upload your presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've put myself back onto video, and I hope I am visible.
Not yet, uh-huh. But we can see the presentation.
I see. It says, I wonder why, perhaps, on my side, I am on video, but perhaps it might also need an admin to assist.
Okay,
thank you.
Sorry, Ms. Kota, I'm just starting my stopwatch. Please also time yourself. You have got 20 minutes to touch on your main areas. Remember that the presentation was sent to us and we did go through it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've put my timer on. My name is Zukiswa Kota and I represent the Budget Justice Coalition. I also work at the Public Service Accountability Monitor in Makanda, which is at Rhodes University, and is one of the members of the coalition. Perhaps just a very brief background of the coalition and why we feel the opportunity to be here today is important. We bring together a diverse group of civil society organizations in South Africa, and what brings us together is a commitment to increasing public participation within the budget process, but also to find ways to meet people's needs or to use the budget or to promote the use of budgets to promote people's needs and well-being. Our organizations are listed on the slide, and I'm aware that members have access to that. So if we have any questions around that, I'd be happy to answer, but for now, I won't go into detail. But needless to say, it's a broad, diverse group of organizations. Perhaps to get into the crux of our presentation, looking at the appropriations that was tabled in 2020 in February, which seems quite a long time ago now. The BJSD has over time focused a lot on what is tabled before Parliament in many instances, and we often use the lens, a human rights lens, to look at the budget. So we make this submission with the hope of contributing to what we feel may be measures to help citizens and the economy to recover from the impact of COVID-19. We are aware that the special adjustment budget is yet to come, and so what we focus on are what we've noted in the appropriations to date, and also make calls perhaps for the committee for areas that we feel are important to focus on in relation to their oversight mandate. Specifically in relation to the economic relief package that was announced to respond to the pandemic, we raise areas of concern that relate to procurement and responses to the social impact of COVID-19. in relation to the $500 billion economic relief package in particular, we do note that this is significant, and I think this is something that is worth underscoring. So at no moment would the coalition feel that this is not a small measure. So we note that from the outset, given the limitations of our fiscus. We do, however, note other areas that we would like the committee to focus on in terms of asking particular questions about the economic relief package. We also ask questions about the $130 billion, which is intended to be reprioritized from the budget. We raise concerns, for example, about the extent to which new funds, new money will be injected. Where this will come from is also an area of concern for us, and many within the coalition have sought to ask those questions. We're also asking ultimately who any reprioritizations and new funding would benefit, which seems like a counterproductive or an obvious question with an obvious answer. But what we have found difficult to do, what we have found it difficult to find, is information ultimately that can assist with identifying specifically how the reprioritizations will be done in a range of areas. We also underscore that likely there will be savings made in terms of travel and accommodation, and we would want specifically to make particular calls in relation to how these savings should be spent, and of course to avoid cuts to health and education. First call that we make is that we would like a much more distinct and solid response to addressing crippling hunger that we see. We contend at the moment that what we've seen in social grant allocations is simply not adequate, and we go into detail in our submission around that. We note also that with 55% of our country sitting below the poverty line in 2020 figures, this is an area of concern and one that does require a much more concerted effort in terms of a response from our government. And perhaps what really we would like to emphasize is that on the one hand, even before COVID-19 hit us, we had a significant proportion of our population who were reporting to be experiencing hunger on a regular basis. But of course, with COVID-19, and there have been consequent studies, for example, subsequent studies done by the HSRC is one that really emphasize the point that lockdown has had an impact of deepening hunger and deepening this particular area of concern within communities. So for example, that 24% of people were reported to not be able to buy food within the context of lockdown. And of course, the background to this is people losing their main sources of income and with a particular lens on the informal sector. And another area of concern for us is that poor households in particular experience food shortages. So at a point in the middle of the month, research shows that many households are faced with inadequate food and hunger. And so, of course, the context of lockdown and the impacts of that has deepened hunger. We also emphasize the calls that were made to top up the child support grant, which of course were made not just by organizations or groupings like ourselves, but by many within the country. And we feel that the response on the one hand was somewhat delayed and on the other hand was inadequate given the need and given really in relation to children and vulnerability. And so we would really like the committee to take some of the proposals and questions forward to the National Treasury. Next slide. So another area of concern for us is the provisioning of basic services, which goes hand in hand with ensuring that people who already are in situations of vulnerability do not face further vulnerability. We would like the committee to emphasize areas of underspending within the fiscus. So this, for example, comes out of the 2019-20 budget review and is reflected on Vuleka Mali, which is an open budget data portal. What we emphasize there is an underspend of 250 million rand in one particular program relating to electrification and energy. And here, what we really emphasize is that basic services like electricity in communities are fundamental, and we cannot have a situation where there is underspending that would ultimately or otherwise have a direct benefit for communities who are currently without basic services. And so again, here, in terms of underspend in particular areas, we would really call on the committee to support us in making this call to entrench and strengthen the fiscal management in particular departments. We call also for a look at a special health budget or the consideration of creating a special health budget. We are particularly concerned with areas that relate to education and health. And where health is concerned, the BJC has often highlighted what the impact of critical human resource shortages has. And here I've actually copied our call verbatim because it is an area of significant concern and one in which we feel the impact of the pandemic is already showing both anecdotally and in reports from departments is already showing severe impacts. So we call on the committee to request the Department of Health to consider make information available about personnel numbers and vacancies. And in particular, we would like to request an engagement or that committees really engage with the National Treasury to work on a special health budget, which should include provisioning for key vacancies that must be filled. We expect and likely already this is an issue that the need for particular critical personnel will be deepened with the impact of COVID-19, virologists being one and other medical professionals. I will leave out the specific areas that we feel that we posit may bring about a need for additional budgets.
Ms. Gota?
Thanks for that.
Just a second, sorry to interrupt you.
No problem.
My screen is blank, Darren. Am I the only one who's having a blank screen?
Chair, everything is fine on my side. I don't know what's
going on.
Honourable
members, are you fine?
Yes, the screen is visible, Chair.
Mine is
okay.
The screen is visible?
No, that's fine. No.
It's fine.
No, that's fine. I take it to be a problem on our side with connectivity. Let me allow Ms. Gota to continue. I'm looking at the presentation that was sent to me in the meantime, but it's fine if it's visible. It means the problem is on our
Njadu?
Side. Yes, Honorable Njadu. Yes, Honorable Njadu.
Yes, I'm fine, Chair. The screen is fine, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Continue, Ms. Gota. I know you have taken your minute. Please continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Hopefully, I'll still finish in time. I'm on slide 7 of the presentation, and what's highlighted there is another area of interest for us that we hope the committee will provide some support or perhaps engagement on. And it is that the country often sits very high in relation to budget transparency. So the results you see on the screen or on your presentation are what came out of the most recent Open Budget Index, which essentially scores countries, 117 countries, in relation to the openness or the degree of openness and transparency of their budget documents. South Africa being a top performer globally, so that's something to look to be proud of. What we are concerned about are the issues of public participation and how we score very poorly in this regard. And this relates to the creation of formal opportunities for members of the public and civil society to participate in the budget process. I raise this in this particular presentation because I think it's something that many I know in the committee are concerned about and is an area that that needs significant improvement. So the scores below on the relate to specifically creating opportunities throughout the budget process. So within the formulation stage, within the approval stage, which you'll note, and I think perhaps for Parliament is something of a positive area, but can do with some improvement, a score of 55 out of 100 of opportunities that are created for people and organizations like myself to present before a committee on the budget, but still not good enough in the sense that 61 is what the International Budget Partnership considers as a score that essentially is meaningful in terms of encouraging participation or deepening engagement. But in the implementation of the budget, which is again taking it back to the executive, the score goes back to 25 out of 100, which again for us is simply not positive at all. And lastly, perhaps of surprise to many, has been the participation score within the audit phase of the budget process, which relates to the Auditor General or the Supreme Audit Institution, which is the AG's office in this case, which scores 0 out of 100 in relation to creation of of formal opportunities for members of the public and others to engage in budget processes. But perhaps on that, just to note recent events in terms of the AG's office and offering to do so. I'm noting that the screen is not my presentation off the screen, so I will use my own. Just in the last few minutes, what we would like to focus on is the content of, or the context of, emergency procurement, which of course, procurement broadly speaking is an area worth interrogating. But in the context of COVID-19, we call on the committee to perhaps strengthen their oversight by making use of budget data portals and a range of other opportunities. But in particular, that reallocation of budgets, we would call on the committee to make sure that these are more transparent, that this information is made public, that this information is published in machine-readable formats and in manners that many more of the public can see and engage with. Even as organizations with relatively good access to such information, we have found it very difficult to follow with ease the processes of procurement, to track procurement data relating to COVID-19 and its response. So we also note a recent statement by Minister Mboweni, who committed to announcing the detailed budget adjustments in due course, and we acknowledge that. But at the moment, we would like to again encourage the committee perhaps to consider engaging with the AG's office, who have offered to provide support to municipalities and provinces. And we would welcome the suggestion from, or suggestions and support from Parliament in this regard. Wrapping up, we have a list of recommendations, many of which are detailed in the fuller presentation, the fuller written submission. But perhaps above all, we really would like the committee to champion issues of transparency and make sure that decision making within this context is open. We, in fact, underscored this imperative even before the onset of COVID-19 with a particular lens on Budget 2020. We also call on a strengthening of the social grant component of the economic stimulus package. As I indicated earlier, we feel that this is not adequate given the research we've tabled before the committee and our concerns in relation to the need on the ground. We again call for an increase of 500 Rand to the child support grant, and that this should be made to each child, so per child grant rather than per carer. We obviously, you know, as we often have, underscore the need to ensure that gender-based violence is responded to and that adequate funding is put towards this. And we find that this has been inadequate both before COVID-19 and, of course, now there is even less clarity on funding in this regard. Again, the reform, skipping to the last of the our recommendations, the three last relate to the special health budget that we recommend, and we would really love to hear what the committee have to say in relation to that. The entrenching of public participation, and in fact, we're encouraged by this opportunity to present remotely before a committee. Many of us would not have been able to necessarily travel to Cape Town to do this, and so being able to do this right now is something that we are highly encouraged by and are grateful to the committee for that. We look forward to seeing more. and lastly, that we would really emphasize the need to reform national procurement and the system in general to entrench transparency, participation, and to be sure that we as citizens and committees are enabled to monitor procurement and supply chain management process throughout the contracting cycle, not only at the point at which things have already gone wrong. And so this is particularly important in the context of COVID-19. I'm on slide 10 of 10, Chair. The BJC would in particular like to emphasize the need for South African government to really to promote equality by using budgets. In this instance, we've seen a deepening of inequality, a deepening of poverty, a deepening of food security or food insecurity in this context. And so we believe that the use of fiscal policy objectives should really be at the heart of responses or human rights should be at the heart of responses in this regard. So we find that what we call for is supported in the Constitution in terms of, a human rights lens on all fiscal decision making. And lastly, we would urge the committee to consider our recommendations that we've proposed, and of course, more detail in our written submission, with a particular eye on the COVID-19 response. And we look forward again to engaging with the committee in relation to the special adjustments budget in June or July. Thank you.
Hey, you're mute.
Hi, can you hear me? Hello? Hi. Thank you, Ms. Korta, for the presentation. We are now going to have COSATU. COSATU, as we have said, Ms. Korta was just on time. Thank you very much. We'll then request COSATU. Who's there from COSATU, Karen?
Matthew Parks is here, Chair. He's ready to present.
Matthew, please time yourself. I know workers have a lot of things to say on this budget, but there's 20 minutes, and then want to engage with yourself after this. So please start.
No, thank you, Comrade Chair. Yes, I'll try to be on time. And if I misbehave, Comrade, the other chairperson will reprimand me very quickly. let me also apologize, Comrade Chair, if I do repeat some issues that members might have heard from us over many years, because many issues do carry through throughout the period. But I think it is good to see members, and it's good to see they look like they're all in good health. Let me cut straight to the PowerPoint. I think Darren will just manage it for me, so we can go to the first slide, Chair. I think, Chair, it's a bit of a juggling act with this budget, because so much has happened in the last 2 months. So I'll try to deal with our concerns and proposals for the existing budget, but also to raise some of our expectations for the coming supplementary budget that will be tabled in about 2 weeks' time by government and parliament. Chair Lucas COSATU, our key concerns about the going into this existing budget was that we already had a 40% and rising level of unemployment across the many sectors of the economy. Workers are being retrenched. And of course, your members would know we have huge levels of inequality and poverty. Chair, also our members were feeling the brunt of the collapsing SOEs in many areas. So they're not being paid on time. Collapse of many municipalities. We have about 27 municipalities which were no longer able to pay workers on time. And of course, the declining levels of service delivery in many departments and provinces. I think, Chair, it'd be stating the obvious that we are concerned about the rising levels of corruption and wasteful expenditure. And of course, the very worrying levels, even before the shutdown, of the declining levels of revenue as given by SARS. And then, of course, Chair, as we all know, that we were already in a recession before we even went into the lockdown. Next slide, Darren. Chair, I think we really had hoped, as COSATU, in the budget speech by the Minister, Comrade Mboweni, to have seen some kind of coherent and decisive response from government to the many economic governance and budgetary crises we faced. We had really hoped to see a stimulus package, a clear fleshing out by the different departments of the jobs and investment commitments by government. Only in about 5 or 6 departments were there any clear job creation targets. We had really hoped to hear a plan to get us out of the recession, back towards growing the economy, or a plan to fix the many SOEs, a plan to deal with the debt issues, and then, of course, Chair, the plan to expand the mandate of the Reserve Bank. I must say, Chair, we're quite pleased with the role the Reserve Bank has played during this shutdown, and that is the kind of work we had hoped to see them playing throughout this period. Next slide, Jed Darren. Chair, I think, our one concern about the lack of a stimulus plan is that how would the existing budget have a positive implication for rising levels of unemployment? We didn't see what would take us out of the recession. Chair, on the issue of corruption, we see very few consequences for those who have looted in the state and the SOEs, both in the public service and in the private sector. We've seen very, very little action by the NPA to deal with those who have been implicated in corruption. Next slide. Chair, again, we saw very few measures to look at alternative or new ways of creating revenue for the state. We do appreciate in many areas we are reaching a tax ceiling, but we thought there was some space. And what makes it difficult for us in that regard is that we feel in the past 3 budgets, most of the tax increases went actually to the working and middle class families. The only thing we could really get out of this budget, Comrade Chair, was a fixation on the public service wage bill. Next slide. Chair, so I think we are pleased that government is going to table a new budget, I think on the 24th of June, or supplementary budget rather. we really hope to see a significant cutting of funding on many fronts which are no longer critical or relevant. And the government needs to be quite bold and decisive around that. We'd hope to see a significant shifting of funding towards key departments which are on the front line of fighting COVID-19, such as health, the two education departments, transport, human settlements and water, but also key departments like employment and labor, but also trade and industry in terms of growing the economy and energy and so on. Next slide. Chair, we as COSATU, we do welcome the 500 billion rand economic relief measures announced by the president last month. We treat it as an economic relief measures for now, not a stimulus plan. So hoping the stimulus plan will really see a very bold and decisive supplementary budget. We'd want to see a stimulus plan of not less than 1 trillion rand if we're going to counter, and we know the figures are not certain yet, but you get projections of up to 16% GDP contraction. And of course, we get many projections of unemployment pushing past 50%. We would want to see stimulus relief, Chair, being conditional to businesses, that government will give you a stimulus relief, loans, et cetera. But it must be conditional upon those companies not retrenching. They must save those workers. So we can't use workers' taxes to save a company and then they go and retrench workers. We'd also want to see government being very creative and to see how can they incentivize the stimulus plan and link it to job creation. So if an employer can show they're creating new jobs, then those stimulus loans could be written off as grants, et cetera. Chair, you would know that right now 90% of workers have gone back to work, but there's about 10% of workers who can't go back to work, either because they're above the age of 60, or they have existing comorbidities, or they're in high social employment sectors like hairdressers, cinemas, entertainment sectors, and there needs to be some dedicated sectoral support for those industries, you know, your tourism, your hospitality, hotels, etc. Yeah, I know members will say correctly that where will we get money from? And we have to be honest, government on its own will never have enough money. If you look at the road backlog, it's about 600 billion rand. And there simply is not enough taxes you can raise to fill the holes. So it means the private sector must come to the party significantly. We think we must simply use Regulation 28, which provides for investment funds to invest up to 10% of their assets in alternative investments. We think these need to be impact investments. And these need to prioritize key economic infrastructure, which will help grow the economy, help stimulate it, help create jobs. Chair, we think critical ones has to be the issue of ports, because that will help us to boost our manufacturing exports, agricultural exports, etc. You just simply need to go to Durban or Cape Town Harbor to see the huge backlogs there. We need to invest in rail so we can get freight or goods to our ports quickly. We can get workers on time to work. We need to sort out the crisis facing Eskom and the energy sector as a whole, so it can become a growth sector for the economy and not a hindrance to industry and not a burden to consumers in the state. I think, Chair, we'd also want to see water issues being sorted out, because it's another major impediment to growing the economy. Then, of course, investing in education and health as part of growing our human capital. Chair, I think to help address the trust deficit and help to make sure these impact investments materialize and don't just remain positive objectives, there should be an impact investment advisory council which consists of government, business and labor, consists of experts to help prioritize where we must invest our money and make sure that it's coordinated and it happens. Chair, you would have seen that we appreciate the work the president has done in the cabinet to tap into all existing international financial help we can get from the African Development Bank, the BRICS Bank, and even from the IMF, Chair. It's not an easy thing for COSATU to agree to it, but we've had extensive engagement with the president, with government. So our simple position has been let there be transparency, let the conditions not undermine our sovereignty, the interests should not be exorbitant, and we're fine with that. Desperate times means we must tap into whatever resources we can get, as long as it doesn't undermine the state's sovereignty and we don't go too far into the debt crisis. But we accept it must be done now because of the crisis we are facing. In terms of additional revenue resources, Chair, we think there is still some space left for tax increases despite COVID-19. For those who earn above 1.5 million, the top two income tax bracket inflation adjustments, inheritance taxes and so on. I think, Chair, maybe it's also good just to remind those members, especially the new members, The 5th Parliament Finance Committees had done a lot of work around the VAT hike and made specific progressive proposals to provide some relief for indigent households, especially around free electricity and free water allocations being increased for those indigent homes. And that hasn't been done yet by the 6th administration. We think that's something we need to push as a way of helping those poor households. Chair, I think we do appreciate the new management, the new leadership of SARS. They've done some excellent work, but we think there's much more work that needs to be done, especially around illicit goods, in particular with regard to tobacco and clothing. But just generally, it's quite alarming, Chair, that only about 5% of containers coming through our harbours are inspected. It really must be 100%. If you can get it up to 100%, Chair, that's additional revenue for the state. It helps to ensure the state subsidies to industry is not undermined. It'll help grow jobs and grow industries. So, Chair, we cannot understand why in this day and age we're not inspecting all containers coming through the harbours. Next slide. Chair, on the issue of corruption, we really feel that despite the cleaning up in some parts of the state, there's not enough being done. We really want to see comprehensive anti-corruption places being put in place, forensic audits of all departments, SOEs, municipalities being put in place. So we really get a sense of how much has been stolen, how much has been recovered, who is being held accountable, etc. We've had about 4 commissions of inquiry, but we see very, very little being done by the NPA and by the departments to implement those recommendations of those commissions. And that for us is quite worrying, Chair. Next slide. Chair, I think we'd also want to see moving towards lifestyle audits of all leaders from national, provincial and local government, but also including management as well as supply chain officials. We're quite worried that the role of the Chief Procurement Office seems to be eroding over the past few years. We want to see being beefed up and to be spread across, especially to SOEs and provincial and local municipalities. Next slide, Chair. Chair, I think one other key thing which is quite critical is the Public Procurement Bill. If we're going to revive the economy, local procurement will be central, both for government, for the private sector, and for consumers. We'd want to really see that Treasury bring that bill to Parliament quite quickly, and it'll really be a strong, comprehensive bill. Chair, I think we're hoping in this supplementary budget that there'll be a significant effort to reduce wasteful expenditure across the board. Next slide. Chair, much has been said about the Public Service Wage Bill. I think just a few points. One is that we feel it is quite stable. It's been at 35% of the budget for the last 10 years. It only really increased in 2008 when the public service headcount was increased to provide for more teachers, nurses, and doctors. And in fact, the headcount has been decreasing by about 1% per annum. Chair, it's also important to remember that in 1994, we had 34 million South Africans and 1 million public servants. Today, we have 57 million South Africans and about 1.2 million public servants. So it hasn't grown exponentially in terms of the monetary amount or the headcount amount. And of course, Chair, I think right now we actually feel with COVID-19 that all the public servants are playing, from law enforcement to healthcare to education, we actually need to have more public servants being employed. Where we think you can make cuts is around management, Chair. I think next slide. Chair, so our simple proposal around the wage bill is for the government to honour the existing wage agreements, to further reduce the positions and the perks of politicians and management. We really want to see, especially the SME management posts being significantly cut, salary cuts being introduced there. We think there should be a single collective bargaining process for the entire state. So not just the public servants, but also the pedestals and the entities as well, which is really where you find the huge levels of a public service wage bill bloated at the top. Chair, we think there also is a need to reduce the wage gap and to also look at ghost posts, especially in the former Homeland Administration areas, as well as to fill critical service delivery posts. Next slide. Chair, we are quite worried that many SOEs, workers are being retrenched now, or the salary is not being paid, or the pension contribution is not being paid. Chair, we think that there is a need to reconsider that and look at alternative options. Chair, there also is a simple issue of management. You have 2/3 of South African Police Service officers being deployed to head and provincial offices and desk positions instead of being deployed to do community policing or to specialized units. Next slide. Chair, in terms of specific departments, and what we hope to see in the supplementary budget, in terms of the shifting of funds to the department is the following 12 departments. Around DTI, we need to think there's a significant capacity needs to be given there, especially for the 14 sectoral master plans, which are quite critical to growing those industries. Employment and labor, if we're talking about enforcing health and safety plans on all 2 million workplaces, on public transport, we need to significantly, in fact, we need to triple the existing just under 2,000 labor inspectors. Next slide. Chair, I think health, for obvious reasons, need to be significantly capacitated. We're quite worried that in the existing budget, it looked like we're actually postponing the NHI implementation targets. But again, there's a massive need, and members would know very well from their constituency work, the under-resourcing of healthcare infrastructure. And in fact, we want to see the healthcare workers right now working in our communities being appointed on a permanent basis, and to also see the appointment of transport health inspectors. Chair, we were quite worried that despite the SONA commitment by the President to increase the number of police service posts, it looks like in the budget there's actually a decreasing by 7,000 police service posts. Next slide. Chair, again, around education, we can't expect safe schooling to take place when hundreds of schools still don't have toilets, don't have water. Many of the infrastructure in the schools, especially in the townships, is in a serious crisis. Government has said they're going to reopen schools this coming Monday. We actually expect that date is going to be again postponed because of the infrastructure crisis at schools. And then not enough work has been done around making sure scholar transport is safe or that online learning can be provided for. Next slide, then. Issue of transport, Chair. Much work has been done around taxis and buses to make sure they're safe. But again, we don't have health inspectors at the taxi, train and bus ranks. Metro rail, Chair, is critical for most urban workers to get to work, but most metro rail lines throughout the country cannot open because they don't have a serious health and safety plan in place. And that is a huge crisis for the economy, Chair. Chair, I think also just lastly on transport, we would want to see from government finally announcing a way forward with regards to e-tolls, which includes a better funding model for transport in Gauteng. Chair, on local government, I think just simply to say it's been a massive crisis. We've not seen coherent plans around government to sort it out. We do support the district model, but we really want to see in the budget some sort of implementation plan for it. But we can't see that community works and public works programs continuously being a source of cheap labor from municipalities for permanent municipal work. But it will mean, Comrade Chair, a new funding model is needed for local government, especially in the rural areas. Next slide. Chair, I think around public works, again, I think the role of public works right now has been put in the spotlight around making sure schools and buildings are safe. Chair, I think we were quite disappointed in this budget not to see a comprehensive forensic audit of all the public works buildings leases, because those, from what we've received from reports from our members, is often the cesspool of corruption, especially in a provincial level. And then lastly, Chair, on agriculture, again, to see much more allocation to supporting land reform. This is the largest employer of workers outside of the public service. It's critical to food security, but to find the amount being allocated to land reform, to supporting small farmers, is far too little. Then the last slide, Chair. Again, I think for obvious reasons, Chair, we'd want to see allocation has been given to boost water and sanitation for obvious reasons, a plan to deal with the bucket toilets in informal areas. But again, Chair, we all saw the collapse of the Department of Water and Sanitation two years ago, but the budget was silent about what's been done to bring the department back onto its feet. And then I think lastly, Chair, I think we're quite pleased with government in terms of what they've done with regards to social security during this lockdown, increasing social grants significantly, especially for the 6-month period. We think we really need to look at modernizing the SASA payment systems because there's huge delays in paying it. And I think we would need to have a discussion lastly about looking at a basic income grant or some sort of universal income grant for all South Africans. And it seems we are kind of getting to a broad consensus in that regard, Chair. So let me stop there, Chair. I hope I'm within your time. And yeah, thanks to members for the time and consideration. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much.
We are well on time.
Thank you so much. And then we'll then take Outer. Who's representing Outer, Darren and Babano?
Mr. Matt Johnson, Chairperson.
Okay. Please come in, sir. You have got 20 minutes.
Mr. Johnson.
Thanks very much, Jefferson.
Thank you.
Good afternoon to all the members, and thanks for the opportunity. It's Friday afternoon, so I won't read everything off the presentation. Chair, I'm gonna really focus what I'm saying on what we think the committee can do, the recommendations that we have for the committee, and just speak to really the appropriations bill and not to the sources of revenue. There'll be more of a focus toward the end of the month when we come to the revised fiscal framework. Next slide, please. Just to give an overview of where we're coming from, I think I would like to highlight the rule according to which this committee and others in the National Assembly really have the power to influence the budget. And that's Rule 227, subsection 1C, that says oversight mandate of a portfolio committee is strengthened by providing that it may inter alia monitor, investigate, inquire into, and make recommendations concerning any such executive organ of state falling within its mandate, including the legislative program, budget, rationalization, function, organization, structure, staff, and policies of such an organ of state. That's the context, Chair, that we really see your power being, and that there's really a significant wiggle room for committees like yourselves to make change to the budget. So the problem that we're dealing with, Chair, is really one that's three-headed. The main issue being debt servicing costs, the unresolved issues of state capture, and the impact of COVID-19. Chair, in tandem with this, the issue we're seeing is shrinking tax revenue, persistent waste, adding corruption and inefficiency, and a state-centric economic policy paradigm. And really at the heart of the debt problem is the public entities. The structure of our main submission, Chair, which this presentation shouldn't detract from, is based on the Towards an Economic Strategy document that was published by Treasury last year. Next slide, please. So our focus areas really are on where savings can be made, Chair, in our view, where money can be reprioritized from, since we have the perspective that there's really little room for additional debt. There's really little room for additional tax revenue, especially personal income tax. And we're focusing on a few public entities and sectors where we think savings can be made, and they listed below. I take it for granted that the members have read the content. Thank you, Chair. So in the same breath where these savings can be made, we agree with the former speakers to say that there needs to be more expense in the education and health sectors, especially on infrastructure. And the same goes for communication and digital technologies. Next slide, please. So just to say, Chair, on macroeconomic policy, consolidated expenditure and compensation, we do think that every new emphasis in the reprioritized budget that we're going to see later this month has to be justified. While we do see a critical need for more expense in education, both departments, and in health, there are serious issues with regards to how money is spent and whether we really see value for money. So we really have the conviction that the transformative potential of public spending has been very constrained because of over-concentrated spend in specific sectors like energy, defense, public enterprises, transport, and to a much lesser extent, water and sanitation. In general, Chairperson, I think we really hold the view that there are many small expenses, such as pictures of key people in cabinet that are reprinted every time there's a cabinet reshuffle in all offices across the country. These kinds of simple expenses that can be cut. The same to be said for Parliament and how the logistics of Parliament really cost the taxpayer quite a lot of money. And the solution that we're using at the moment is really a nice change. Next slide, please. So a key issue that we see is in local government. We believe that in terms of the appropriation bill, more should be allocated to the regional and urban development legislative support item, which is really all about reform. As the previous speaker said, we really agree that there has to be a rethinking of how local government spends money, how money is transferred to municipalities, and whether it should be in cases where municipalities have repeated qualified audit outcomes. Chair, this just can't continue as usual. We also believe that provincial government has a much bigger role to play, and that committees like this one and other portfolio committees that are more specific in cooperation with portfolio committee on COCTA and the select committees and really intervene there. Next slide, please. Energy, we do think that there's a problem in repeated appropriation to the department because the targets have not been achieved year on year, but the appropriation remains the same. Chairperson, we think that the committee can take a much stronger stance in really cutting the appropriations when the department doesn't improve its performance. And we believe that allocations must be really in connection with performance outcomes. We saw that there is a proportional increase in the allocation to nuclear energy, and we do think that the plan to procure a big chunk of electricity generation through nuclear energy doesn't align with the IRP. And we think that for this reason, Chair, that the allocation to NEXA should be reduced to 2018 levels. Next slide, please. On the Central Energy Fund, we strongly disagree with a suggestion that was recently made that they should get a portion of the fuel levy. I don't think that that is really something that can be rationalized in the context of what's happening in South Africa at the moment. Many of its subsidiaries are also doing extremely badly in financial terms, and this really doesn't justify any allocations from the fiscus. Eskom is obviously a central issue. It's a problem for all of us. Chair, just to make the comment, in the Division of Revenue hearings, we were requested to provide written responses to some questions specifically dealing with SOEs. We didn't provide that because so much has happened in the past 2 months. So we're trying to address that now. We think that the solar heater program, for example, is something that needs to be zoomed into. We understand that many of those units that have already been procured are standing in storage somewhere and really costing the state money and not benefiting anyone. One of the questions that came, Chairperson, in the Division of Revenue hearing was whether we agree as an organization with a bailout for Eskom from the Government Employees Pension Fund, and the short answer is we do not. We do not believe that Eskom should receive any sort of assistance before its restructuring has been effected. Next slide, please. So just to say, this is obviously the central issue to the public entities that are absorbing too much money. South African Airways is a prime example. Despite the fact that it's been placed in business rescue, we are hearing that there is still plans to keep the airline alive, despite the fact that there is a non-existent market for air travel at the moment due to the lockdown. We don't see how this can be rationalized, and we do think that it's going to remain a financial liability to the state. And in light of that, if government insists on retaining a national airline, we believe that it has to be restructured in a way that will really limit the liability and the exposure of its financial performance to taxpayers by, for example, bringing in equity partners to a very, very big extent. Next slide, please. So just to zoom into this a little bit, Chair, I'm not going to go through all of this, but that is really what I just said. Next slide, please. On Transnet, Chairperson, it really brings to mind state capture and the issues of procuring locomotives. In the appropriation bill as it stands, there is a focused item on renewing the fleet in Transnet, and I think I should also mention what the previous speaker mentioned under PRASA, the Metro Rail, being an equally important problem. We do think that this kind of allocation must go hand in hand with resolutions coming from the Zondo Commission, for example, and that it should not just be given blindly. And these issues have not been resolved, and people who have been responsible or alleged to be responsible for massive wastes of taxpayers' money haven't been held accountable. We believe that should happen immediately. Chair, just to say, on PRASA, I don't think it has its own dedicated slide. We note from the Competition Commission that they have suggested that Metro Rail should be unbundled from PRASA, and I think that's something that the committee should apply its mind to. Next slide, please. On the Department of Education, Chair, just to really give an example of qualitative issues that must be dealt with before appropriations can increase, which we really believe it should, the SITAs are a central problem, which we as an organization have been doing research on, some investigations into, and it looks quite bleak. And we can see that there have been many instances of corruption. And this is a cluster of entities that receive transfers from the Department of Higher Education, and we believe the committee should really scrutinize that. Next slide, please. Water boards and the water trading entity chair, we think this is a really crucial issue. The provision of water and sanitation infrastructure is a human right, and it's not delivered everywhere, especially in more rural provinces like Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and the Free State. There are problems with this infrastructure. Allocations are made, and we just don't see delivery as a result. And to really speak to this, which was also part of the Towards an Economic Strategy document published by National Treasury last year, was a recommendation for an independent water regulator that can really intervene and be a little bit more objective in overseeing what's happening to all these conflicting interests between water boards and municipalities. Next slide. In conclusion, on the public entities, Chair, there's been a review of how many public entities are really necessary, how many state-owned companies are really desirable and sustainable in financial terms, and whether it's benefiting the public in any way. I think the first exercise that was done was in 2012. So we really need to see a reconsideration of how many of the many state-owned entities we have are necessary and whether they are worth the money that is spent on them. I also believe that for those few that are not audited by the Auditor General, that perhaps they should be. And we think there needs to be some sort of a policy reform in civil society. There's been a lot of discussion on an overarching SOE Act, but we do note that the Public Enterprises Department has been talking about a government shareholder management bill for some time. We would urge the committee to really engage with the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises to ask whether that is forthcoming, and we believe it should be. Just some general measures that we believe the entities that are really desirable and that should stay can take is the sale of non-core assets and alternative cash injections to government guarantees and bailouts. Next slide, please. We also think there can be a lot of equity partners to be introduced in a very strategic way. And we believe that the appointment of board members of senior management should be done in a much more transparent way. We believe there should be at least some degree of participation in those processes, Chairperson. We note in the high-level panel's report, and which is a very, very good document, that made exactly this recommendation that there needs to be more participation in how these appointments are made. Next slide. On transport, we think the central issue that hasn't been resolved is the ETOLS matter, as Matthew mentioned. It's something that really needs to be resolved, Chairperson. There's been debate about this for many years, and we as an organization have been making utterances on the fact that it's not sustainable for a long time, and it is being consistently delayed, just adding to the debt burden that we face as a country. I'm referring here to the Rolling Stock Fleet Renewal Program under PRASA that I mentioned earlier. This really needs to be looked at with keen eyes, Chair. We also want to highlight the Road Accident Fund. And as it's transitioning into the Road Accident Benefit Scheme, despite the fact that there have been fewer road accidents, we don't see that there's adequate scrutiny of how much money this entity actually spends. Next slide, please. On communication and digital technologies, Chair, we think that there needs to be much more expense in this area if the savings are made in the sectors that I mentioned earlier. We believe that this can really be beneficial. We note that 1.7 billion rand goes to the ICT enterprise and public entity oversight, but we think that there needs to be a lot more investment in infrastructure. Next slide, please. On water and sanitation, Chair, drawing close to the end, as I mentioned earlier, we really think there needs to be improvements in how money is spent in this sector. There was going to be an inquiry into water and sanitation in Parliament. That didn't happen. But we do note that the Minister has recently announced that a group of lawyers have been appointed to really look into the instances of corruption that happened in the past. We think that that should be resolved. On what the trading entity, it's receiving a large portion of this budget, Chair, and 80% of that goes to acid mine drainage and other capital projects. We think that this really needs to be transparent. It has to be proactive. We note that in the Vaal River system, there is now remedial action that's happening and money is being spent outside of the ordinary budget. And we think the budget can be much more proactive. Next slide, please. On health, Chair, relating to COVID-19, I'm not going to focus on that too much because I do think it's going to be the focus of the supplementary budget. But we understand that there needs to be more spending in this area. Over the medium-term expenditure framework, the spend on infrastructure in education and health is actually set to decrease, and we don't see that as something sensible. We think it should increase, and we also note the delay of the National Health Insurance Plan, which is a problem in light of what's happening now. We are strongly supportive of universal health coverage, but we believe that it has to be a focus in the budget, and there has to be really strong oversight of how that money is going to be spent and where it's going to come from. The funding details were not that clear in the bill thus far. We do hope that the committee will participate in the process as that bill unfolds. Next slide, please. Basic and higher education. Chair, I did focus on CETAs, just highlighting them and that we really see them as a problem that need to be addressed. We think that spending on basic education is really fundamental. In the economic situation we're in now, we don't believe that enough South Africans have a proper opportunity to develop themselves with decent education and facilities that are really dignified across the board. We believe for that reason that there needs to be more spend on infrastructure in schools. Next slide, please. I think that's it. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Thank you, Mr. Johnston. You are well within your time. It's quite a good discipline from our presenters. The next presenter and the last presenter will be African Farmers Association of South Africa. Darren, who's making a presentation? Hello.
Chairperson, it's Mr. Masitela.
Mr. Masitela.
Yes, Chair.
Okay, African Farmers Association, you have got 20 minutes to go through your presentation. You're welcome. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much with the members of the Committee of Parliament. We are highly appreciative of the opportunity that we are given. With me, I'm led with the President, Dr. Masati is here, the TG, Mr. Mtembo, and the SG, Mr. Masoka, are here with me. In this presentation, Chair, with operating within 20 minutes, I'm going to just run through the slides because we have sent the slides to the Chair, but I will re-emphasize the issue that we want the committee to look into. We did not focus on COVID-19 precisely because we think that the supplementary budget will deal with that issue. The outline of the our presentation here, I'm not going to deal with it. Going to the next slide, we are focusing on the problem statement in agricultural sector. We are identifying this because there are three fundamental things that we wish the committee to ponder around and help the farmers to deal with. Firstly, is to increase the annual budget of agriculture by 25%. Secondly, to increase the participations, or put it differently, ensure that there's inclusivity in the agricultural sector where Black women and youth are integrated into agricultural sector. The third point is to ensure that with the budget, the amount of money that's going to be utilized to enable the access to the markets for our farmers in general. And lastly, to look into the rethinking on how to cooperate between national, provincial, and local government. I'll deal with those matters with my slides. The problem statement identifies those things. To say one, there is a widening and dual agricultural sector in South Africa. There's a huge decline of investment in agricultural sector in the country. There's a non-coordinated agricultural development in South Africa, as well as non-support for financial development in agriculture in South Africa. a result of that, there's a huge decline of agricultural funding in the country, and therefore we're thinking that this committee should help us in dealing with the situation. The other problem that we are faced with in the country is the high number of youth unemployment, specifically educated or learned young people who have studied agricultural sector. We think that if you reorganize the processes, those young people will be incorporated into the economy, and therefore it will reduce unemployment rate. The last point that we say is a major problem in the country around the lack of funding for agricultural sector is the hunger and poverty in the country, particularly household food security. You can argue the point that South Africa is not hungry, it does not have hunger, but the food security in South Africa is a major issue. I'll deal with those matters at a later stage. Chair, the next slide is the challenges that the agriculture also is faced with. Low inclusivity caused by high entry barriers for new black players in the sector. Food unavailability, but not accessible due to price differences. The drought and diseases that have been besmirching the agricultural sector is one of the biggest challenges for growth of agricultural sector, and therefore the need for funding for the research and agricultural development would enhance the reduction of this. The climate changes and technological development is also one of the biggest issues for us as the farmers to move from where we are to fourth industrial revolution is one of the biggest issues, and therefore funding agriculture and more would help us in this situation. I've already spoken about unemployment, specifically for educated young people and women in particular. This will help to reduce the widening agricultural sector in the economy. The next slide. We are focusing on the agricultural constraints in South Africa. The reason why we identify this chair, we want to bring members of parliament and the public in general on what we are pursuing when we are addressing these problems. For instance, the lack of title deeds for black farmers or farmers in general is a major issue, whether it's the land that has been redistributed or that land that has been in the hands of the state. For the mere fact that there's no title deed for that is also a major problem in the industry. There's a major issue about water for agricultural growth. I'm not going to go to too details about that. It's self-explanatory on the slide. I want to zoom to the limited developmental finance with the bank operating like commercial bank. Our argument is that if the state is not repositioning the land bank to what it ought to be, a developmental bank, you are as much wasting our time as farmers if you don't deal with the situations. Therefore, through your support as members of parliament, if you are helping for the repositioning of land bank, it will enhance agricultural growth and the employment creation in the country. Without dealing with the climate changes, the drought, which I've actually touched on, the issue of the market is a massive problem. There are many farmers who have products. Those products end up in their farms, and they otherwise sell those products at a very low prices because there's no markets. The COVID-19 was even the major problem for farmers. If you check the price of meat, food from the farm, I'm not talking about the retail, from the farms, the price have gone very, very, very low. So we hope that in terms of the supplementary budget on the COVID-19, this matter will actually be dealt. The next slide. Chair, on this issue, we're trying to show you that at least we show you the almost 100 years of agricultural funding in South Africa. You would see that in the 1940s, agriculture was actually the highest funded, one of the highest industry funded in the country. Look, since the advent of a democracy, the slide shows that either parliamentarians or government does not value agricultural sector. Look at is the lowest to date in funding agricultural sector. And by the way, agriculture is one of the backbone of the economy of this country. We used to call ourselves a food basket of the country, but in the light of what government does or Parliament allocating budget for agricultural sector, the facts speak different from that situation. Next slide. We showing you that post 1994, the land reform distribution has been very, very low. We actually showing that in terms of hectareage, in terms of the finances. So the reality is that we, as farmers, are convinced that Parliament and departments, Treasury and Department of Agriculture, Land Affairs, don't seem to be understanding the situation that we are confronted with as black farmers in South Africa, or farmers in general. So we're thinking that if Parliament could allocate more money for land redistribution and allocate support for those distributed land, you would actually have a better way of dealing with the situation in the country. So I am not going to go to details of what happened, but when we enter into the debate, our team will actually expand on this matter, Chair. The next slide. Chair, we are showing you that the non-seriousness of government in terms of allocations of this. In the financial years, and we actually specifically picked the 2016-2017 financial year, the reallocations of land reform budget was not the amount of money that could enhance agricultural development in this country. No wonder why agricultural sector in the country is declining. You would actually see, Chair, that AgriPax, for instance, was the highest in that year. If members of parliament can go in the provinces and check where those AgriPax are, how much money is being utilized for those things, you will be surprised. So even if you are reallocating the amount of money for the development of agricultural sector for specific programs, you are missing a bigger chunk of ensuring that there is a developmental approach by the state to ensure that agricultural sector remains the backbone of the economy in this country. The next slide. Chair, with this slide, we're showing you that if we are not investing on agricultural research, other countries in the world, in the continent, will be the better agricultural institutions, and they will be feeding South Africa. So for us to be able to expand our international market, our food security influence in South Africa and in the world, there is a need to focus on agricultural research. Department of Science and Technology, as well as the Agriculture and Land Reform, amongst other things, particularly ARC, Agricultural Research Council. If you check the amount of money that budget for Parliament has been budgeting for that ARC, has actually dwindled. So we are suggesting that for the long term, AFASA has actually developed a sector plan, 2030 sector plan, which we would be willing to favor the committee to look into also. We are saying that for the 5th-year horizon, there should be a clear agricultural research plan for the country, because agricultural development hinges on the entire economy of this country. We are convinced that if Parliament can hear us and work with us on this particular matter, particularly as farmers and farm workers in this relation, we'll actually have a better way of ensuring that there is a agricultural growth and economy of this country. We are one of the biggest employment absorbers in the country. So for you to deal with the situation, you'll be able to help the growth of the economy if you were to support the proposal that we're making. Next slide. Chair, on this slide, we are showing the importance, the strategic objective of increasing the budget in supporting the 4 points that we made earlier when we started. When you increase the budget of the Department of Agriculture or agriculture in general, you are creating an inclusive, united, and sustainable agricultural sector in South Africa. Through our research unit and ourselves as practitioners of agriculture, we are certain, and you should be aware, that we have a dual agricultural sector in South Africa. But if you increase the budget, you will be able to address this. The second issue, which is a critical strategic issue for increasing the budget, is to improve agricultural competitiveness, the point I earlier dealt with, you would find a situation where most of the continents in the world will rely on us. Let's make an example today. South Africa is a net export importer of wheat. The question is why? Because we have reduced the research on this matter. We have also reduced the agricultural funding on this issue. And this is a major problem for agricultural sector. And we are going to be dependent on other people. If you look into today, in South Africa, we don't have seed banks, if you like. If anything goes wrong in this country, we're going to be reliant on other wealth or countries for agricultural production. And why did we kill that thing? It's because we didn't budget enough for agricultural development in this country. The other part, Chair, if you budget more for agricultural development in South Africa, you are going to mobilize the resources for food security and economy growth, because you must put your money where your mouth is. Because if you do that, some investors, some other private sectors will also put money into agricultural sector. And lastly, Chair, if you increase the budget, this will improve employment significantly for youth and young people. The last slide, Chair, I'm going back to the point that I've raised. We are asking you to help us to persuade the state to increase the agricultural budget minimum, at least by 25% per annum. That's the minimum we're asking. The other issue that we're asking you to look into, Chair, is for the state treasury to help fund land bank to reposition it to focus mainly on agricultural development. Our argument as AFASA is that at least 60% of agricultural budget in land bank should go for agricultural development, and then the 40% could go to the commercial space and so forth and so on. So, and this, Chair, we are asking you to impress upon government, because this will reduce unemployment. This will also help us to utilize the undistributed land, which is in the state, in the hands of the state, for a better productive use for our people. And last point, Chair, if you, no, maybe we put it wrongly. When you persuade government as parliament, our representative, you will be able to help, you'll be helping us to grow the market for agricultural sector, both internally and externally. But you'll also ensuring that the black people, youth and women are participating in agriculture. Okay, we took this route to give a macro picture of what we suggested without going to the details on the rents and cents. We think that the members of parliament could understand the framework from within which we come. Thank you very much, Chair.
Nkosika Kulba Masitela, that's helpful. Again, you were within your specified time. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Chair.
Masitela, it's honorable members, is my old home was in agriculture. honorable members, we've had four presentations from Mr. Masitela, from Mr. Johnston, from Comrade Matthew, and from Ms. Kota. It's your turn. You hit two birds with one stone, present us today, because you are presenting to two committees. Just to recap on that one, the Standing Committee on Appropriations, which is from the National Assembly, and the Select Committee on Appropriations, which is coming from the National Council of Provinces. So, as I'm saying, we have got two birds with one stone. Honourable members, you know how we do it. We'll allocate 3 minutes per speaker from yourselves, and then try to compress all your questions or your remarks on those 3 minutes to allow everybody to have an opportunity to interact with the presentations that have been given to us. please, I know it's a little bit, just shout your name, because I was trying to find out from Darren whether he's got hands there, but let's just shout your names. I think I'll be able to get your names here. Let's hear who's starting.
I do have three names, Chairperson.
Oh, who's there?
It's Lubabalo here, Chairperson. I do have three names, Mr. Yeah. Ryder, Mr. Yeah. Okamp, and Mr. Karim Chair.
Okay, just Okamp. It's Karim, Peters, Dihale.
Don't forget Mr. Ryder. Please don't forget Mr. Ryder, Chair.
Yeah, I started with him.
Oh, okay, thank you, sir.
Jadu.
Jadu. Honorable Jadu.
Yes.
Come again.
Detroit.
Yes.
Honorable Detroit.
My hand is up, Chairperson.
Honorable Joseph.
Thank you.
My hand is also up, Chair.
Honorable Kaiso. Hello. Do you hear Matafa?
Have you noticed, Karim?
Yes, okay. Yes, I did. I'll just repeat the names again. Okay. Can I repeat the names? This is the order. Just mark yourself where you are. I'm having Honorable Ryder, mm-hmm. Honorable Okamp, Honorable Karim, Honorable Peters, Honorable Dihale, Honorable Njatu, Honorable Detroit, Honorable Joseph, Honorable Kaiso, Honorable Matafa. Did I leave out any name?
No.
No. Okay. Honorable members, we've got 3 minutes. I say try to compress everything in 3 minutes and let's see how far we go. If we still have some time after this, I will take a second round. But let's start 3 minutes and please time yourselves. I'm also timing you from my side. Thank you. Honorable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And for the presentations and the work that went in behind it, again, our appreciation from the committee's point of view, I think we appreciate that we get the public submissions and they make our work easier, certainly. So if I can start with the Budget Justice Coalition, just one question, slide 8 and also in the background document, you spoke about budget data platforms. If you can help me understand a little bit more about what that means, and perhaps guide us in terms of what you mean by budget data platforms. The rest of the presentation, I think, was easily understood and well put together. Then I am going to move on to Kasatu. Kasatu, Mr. Pox, yes, well done. Thank you. Your presentation was a very different tone from the written submission that we received. Now, we didn't get an advanced copy of the presentation, but the written presentation, it almost seems to have come from, I don't want to say a different faction, but certainly a different author, because the tone was decidedly different. The written submission was quite combative, in fact. Spoke about disappointment and being the budget being provocative and so on. I actually thought, Mr. Parks, your presentation was quite constructive. And again, we don't agree on all points, and we will always understand that. But I found your presentation and certainly your proposals to be coherent and largely constructive. The one thing I wanted to just ask from Kasatu specifically is the you always come to the committee with requests and demands, and certainly I know that's how you approach the your relationship with government as well. But I just want to hear if there's any kind of a commitment to productivity on your side. So certainly I understand that you are considering the bill is suitable and not out of line, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that what we're finding is that there's a lack of productivity. And I was wondering if you urge your members, if there's any kind of commitment from yourself to try and urge your members to deal with productivity aspects on that. I was pleased to see that you say that you are now ready to engage, because it wasn't the impression that we had at your last presentation to this committee. I strongly with your issues around corruption and certainly around some of the bloated management positions. But I think those are my remarks on Kasatu. In terms of Atta, I enjoyed your presentation. Well done and well presented as well, Mr. Johnson.
Honorable Raida.
The last presentation we had was... Honorable Raida. 10 seconds, Chair, if I may.
In the time, continue. Continue.
Thank you very much. Well done. I like this word of food for thought. Mr. Masia, a lot of time, but you spoke about the price at the farm gates and then the big markup by retailers. I'd like to hear your recommendations on that. And then just in terms of land reform, if you have, you prefer a leasehold mechanism or if you're actually looking for transfer of ownership. I'll leave it at that then. Thank you, Chair, under time pressure.
Okay. Thank you. Honorable Okam.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you to everybody for the presentations. It was quite enlightening. Honorable Chair, 2 days ago, we had a briefing by National Treasury, and Dr. Mabisi from National Treasury started to say, we are in trouble. Now, if I look at what has been presented by the public in this presentation this afternoon, we heard that more than 55% of the people of South Africa are living below the poverty line. That is shocking. 13 million people, well, at this stage, 15 million people regularly experience hunger. Kusatu came and said that we've got a 40% unemployment. And obviously, we know that due to this COVID pandemic, this will most probably rise. I think we have to agree with Dr. Modise from Treasury when we say that we are in trouble. And I can sincerely understand the problems that the presenters of today have experienced. With regards to this, I would like to find out from Kusatu. We have been notified that there will be a cut of 37 billion rands to the budget due to the fact that there will not be any increases to government employees. We have asked the question whether that has been negotiated with the unions, and we could not get a clear positive answer on that, and it appears that it has not. What is the response from unions with regards to that 37 billion rand cut that Treasury are suggesting? Have they agreed to that? If not, what is their stance on that? With regards to the state-owned enterprises, we have discussed that and discussed the fact that state-owned enterprises and the funding that they've received over the years have definitely been detrimental to the finances of South Africa. The government also proposes, or they want to take use of the pension funds of government employees to now be used as security for funding for those failing state-owned enterprises. Have Kusatu discussed it with their members, of which a lot of them are state employees, government employees, and what are their stance on that with regards to making use of private citizens' money in order to stand as security for the incapabilities of this government? Last question for Mr. Parks from Kusatu. During this whole COVID pandemic, we saw that funding to people of the public has been done in accordance with BEE requirements. That led to the fact that a lot of businesses owned by people that did not qualify for funding due to the fact that they are maybe white owned or that they are not fully BEE compliant had to close their doors. A lot of black people, colored people, white people worked in those industries or for those firms. What will the effect on the unemployment rate be due to the implementation of these poorly suggested BEE requirements that has been misused during this COVID pandemic? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Okamp. You were well within your time. Honorable Karim?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, you know, if one listens to the submissions made, for the most part, I agree with most of the submissions made. But maybe the Appropriations Committee, I don't know whether it's possible, Chairpersons, but should consider, you know, saying to people, especially in the COVID-19 circumstances now, they should propose more concretely the trade-offs that they are offering and also the sources of funding. Given that we heard last week that SARS in itself will get 300 billion rands less. Obviously, this is a comment on the 2020 budget. Even so, in the Appropriations Committee, people must tell us what trade-offs they're proposing. Otherwise, as unintentional as it is, it becomes a shopping list, Chairperson. The other thing to say is that Matthews is quite right. Matthew Parks is quite right. when we passed the VAT bill, we said a three-year time span within which we have to review the 15% VAT and consider bringing it back to 14% if possible. Now, given the COVID-19 circumstances, Comrade Chair, I don't know how possible that is, but we could look into some sort of VAT relief, bearing in mind the severe financial constraints. Certainly, I'm not sure that I understood him when he talked about NHI. As I understand it, our very attempt to deal with the health crisis flowing from COVID-19 is serving to strengthen and accelerate the process of NHI. Perhaps if I misunderstood, we'll explain. On the Impact Investment Council, I think, Comrade Chairs, we should actually have a briefing with them at some stage, if that's appropriate. Finally, does COSATU know or have any sense, who knows, of course, precisely, but they have any sense how many people are likely to lose their jobs? And is the location of their comments going to be as part of the overall economic strategy? In other words, I know there's an alliance economic strategy emerging, which COSATU is a part of, but has COSATU got a specific strategy, overall economic strategy, within which it's locating its comments here, or will hopefully do so when it comes to the supplementary budget? Finally, in respect of AFASA, I think it's a very good input, Comrade Mr. Masitela. For those who don't know, he's a former MEC and a former member of the National Assembly, and so he knows how to manage us, but it's a very good submission, Chairperson. What are we supposed to say except that broadly we endorse it, but whether it's doable or not is something that we will have to deal with. And I think that COSATU should make its submission also to the minister, although it's very late. But I think broadly, can I plead, Chairpersons, that we ask our public stakeholders to give us some sense, at least, they can't do everything, of where the resources will come from and what the trade-offs are when they make proposals. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Karim. Honorable Peters, Honorable Karim, you were well within your time, by the way. Honorable Peters.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Am I audible?
Yes, please.
Yes, I was saying thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to all the presenters. But the presenters before COSATU, I couldn't follow quite well because I had a technical problem. So it's my challenge. But let me have the few questions that I had worked on, Chair. The first one is to COSATU. COSATU speaks to a challenge of unemployment, but and also the challenge of youth unemployment in particular. I want to know from COSATU, is COSATU in support of the view that because of COVID-19, there should be early retirement of those above 55 or 60, especially in view of the fact that they are the ones that are living with the comorbidities of other diseases that are related to the infection of COVID? And what type of approach is COSATU proposing? Is COSATU proposing a VSP-type option, or how to deal with this particular issue? And if COSATU speaks about salary cuts, which category of personnel are you talking to that needs to see these salary cuts? Are you talking about across the board? And I fully support COSATU's call for your labor and health inspectors, and in particular, the appointment of the transport health inspectors, because I'm sure you would be aware that there is a team of men and women and in the employ of the state, although on a limited package like your CWP, your EPWP, who could be retrained and reskilled to be able to do that particular task. And I also want to know, COSATU speaks about the BIG. BIG vis-a-vis the SRD grants, this grant, the 350 grants, how do COSATU propose government actually fund this BRG? Outer, what is Outer's view with regard to the RAPSB, especially in view of the challenges that the Road Accident Fund has? I didn't hear you speak much to that. Mr. Masitela, thank you very much. And I think the presentation was out of this world for me in particular. And I was just asking myself sitting here whether AFASA has got a national footprint and the relationship of AFASA with other statutory bodies, as well as the Department of Agriculture. And I have heard you speak about the need for increasing the research budget and your concern about the fact that very soon South Africa will, or we do as South Africa, have a challenge with regard to the seed bank. I heard you speak about it, the ARC not adequately being funded, but what would be an ideal equitable funding for the ARC? But in terms of
Honorable Peters, in the time,
ARC supporting African farmers adequately? Because I would believe that it is important that the African community be allowed to enter. Chairperson, lastly, AFASA, how do we build the passion in our young African children through schooling with agriculture in schools? Because agriculture in schools has totally vanished. And I would believe for the long term, investment in food security and agriculture, we need children to have the passion and they need to be taught agriculture at an early stage. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Peters. Honorable Tihale.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good evening to everybody. Let me join my colleagues in thanking all the presenters for the good presentations they have given us today. And as I was listening to their presentation, I could feel that all the presenters have in their heart, they really want to see all the needy living a better life. But then to the Budget Justice Coalition, when they talk about the economic relief package, Honorable Karim put it clearly that they're just coming up with a shopping list and they don't give us a direction as to where are they really thinking maybe this can benefit this. Or let me just put it like this. On their emergency procurement, they are talking about $130 billion from budget reprioritization, and they are raising concerns as to who will it benefit, but they are not coming up with suggestions, telling the committee that maybe if this money can benefit 1, 2, 3, I think it will assist the committee because we'll be able to have a knowledge of what it is that they are thinking, especially when it comes to our time maybe for debate. And the last one also to the same organization, they are talking about the increased transparency in fiscal decision making, and they are trying to give the government the marks. How did they obtain their marks? And my question is, why are they not giving the government 100 over 100? If ever maybe they are continue to give them this 87 over 125, why are they not, like, I see them as like an educator with marking an assignment who will give you maybe zero without even telling you what is it that you did in order to improve this marks. So they are just giving us they are just rating the government, but they're not telling us as to where maybe they think if 1, 2, 3 can be done, then we'll be able to see them giving us 100 over 100 or giving whoever 100 over 100. 10%, that's my question. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Tihale. Honorable Jatu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also join the previous on the recommendations, and then from outer also the proposals that they are making. I don't have any questions on that. And then on BJC, Chairperson was focusing on transport of public participation, which I think from a position of the chair is maybe to, in terms of the model that is being used in terms of public participation, where stakeholders are coming to the House or to Parliament and also now in the COVID-19 period that we are having this visual and also written submission. So just maybe to clarify that point on the transparency on public hearings or public participation. Then my last point, Chair, will be to AFASA, African farmers. Chair, my point there to African farmers, I took 2 points, which is the low inclusivity of entry for black farmers. I need more detailed explanation on what the obstacles are. As one understands, there are a number of schemes and also and how what are the obstacles. Then the agri-packs, I agree with the presenter that there's a lot of money in agri-packs, and agri-packs are linked from national, provincial. So also want to check in terms of what are the obstacles for AFASA not to be able to source from agri-packs, which is a multi-farming sector in all sectors which are there. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Njatu. We're struggling a little bit to hear you, but I hope the presenters did get the gist of your question. Honorable Du Toit.
Thank you, Chair. Am I audible?
Very much so, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity and all the presenters for presenting today. With regards to Kusatu, slide 9, you mentioned you want to have changes in the income tax brackets and inflation adjustments and inheritance. We cannot tax businesses or individuals more than they are already being taxed. They are overtaxed at this stage. Businesses must receive tax relief to enable them to have more movement in the market, to do business more freely, and in effect to employ more personnel. OTA, thank you for your presentation. And then AFA, I agree that food security is a huge priority in South Africa. I agree that drought and diseases hasn't received the necessary assistance it's supposed to receive. If I can only refer to a document that we were supposed to have been supplied with by the Department of Agriculture with regards to drought relief in South Africa, that document was supposed to have been put on the table at the end of February this year to this committee, and up to now we haven't received it yet. You mentioned you wanted transformation in the market chain. It is clear that South African farm or that the African Farmers Association is canvassing only for the assistance of black farmers, but isn't it true that many white farmers have acted as mentors in many instances to assist new farmers that are entering the farming arena with great success? It is of the utmost importance that all farmers, not only subsistence farmers, but more so commercial farmers, receive assistance from government in the light of food security. And it is, however, of the utmost importance that there be no discrimination on the basis of race when assistance is given to farmers. There's enough room in the market to accommodate the current and the upcoming farmers in this market. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Du Toit. Well within your time, Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I just want to comment on COSATU's first letter, and I'm glad that their willingness to engage, and of course they want to engage, although they seen at the moment, I think they also see government as going through a challenge to do what they think government should do. But I think on a state of entities, some is in ICU, Chairperson, and I think if they're in ICU, we need to stabilize them before we can save them. I agree with Member Peters. It is important that COSATU assist us by telling us where is the cut-off level of senior management. We need to deal with the public service, and COSATU seems to me resist that, but it appears they are willing to say to us it is senior management and the government or politicians that is causing the financial problems. So tell us who's the senior management. We will have to deal with ourselves. Chairperson, I would just want to say thank you. Two issues I want to ask. What is the the emphasis on the land bank is important, but what is the role that the land bank previously, historically disadvantaged people in the farming community? What role can the land bank play, in their opinion, because they ask us to reposition the land bank, which I think is important now. And of course, the other point is research. We need to invest more money on in all levels. If you don't do research, you can't do evidence-based policy proposals. So that is important, but I want to support my previous member by saying all farmers need to contribute. All farmers do contribute to food security, but the land bank can do more to do land reform and land distribution. Mascota, thank you very much. I would like you to submit proposals about social beneficiaries. What figures, what totals, you mentioned one, but what is the other categories of social services that you want to increase by how much? And what do you propose for us to increase public participation? It is a very important point you raise, and this committee is working very hard to do public participation. But what can you help us? Your survey says 24%. Did you do it yourself? Does it come from outside, external? Where do you get that 24% from? Help us that we can also help ourselves to increase public participation.
Big injury time, Honorable Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. Okta, Chairperson, state-owned entities, please assist us on these entities that should generate profit, and how we probably just can't talk about the problems on SAA and so on, but assist us the difference between profitable state-owned entities and the ones that must give a general service for the good of the public. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Joseph. Honorable Paiso.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And let me take also the cue to appreciate and the presentation that have been made by different presenters this afternoon. But I want to go straight first to this matter. Maybe it's important for me to clarify this point. The issue of challenge of disinvestment in the country has actually been exacerbated by the greediness of monopoly industries in the country, not because of the emergence of the COVID-19 and the preference of BEE. So I think it's very important that now there has been that trend of disinvestment which resulted in huge job losses in the country. It is not because of COVID-19 only presented these challenges. So I think it will help to clarify those minds that have a doubtfulness on the issue of unemployment in the country because of that disinvestment approach by big monopoly countries. And I think the government is handling the issue of preference of BEE quite fairly because the previously disadvantaged, that is where the focus is in terms of, you know, developing of our people. So there's nothing wrong there with the issue of BEE. So let
thank
me...
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Honorable... No. I'll let you know. That's fine. It's Honorable Paiso is still in. I'll let you know.
Yes. And readily agree with a number of points that Kosatu has made.
No, Honorable Mashanga, I'll let you know. It's still Honorable Paiso.
And readily agree with a number of points that Kosatu has raised, proposals there that can assist us as a committee moving forward. But I also want to get it a further clarity or understanding as to the issue which Kosatu raised on the stimulus packages for employers. That do you mean that the government should not allow a situation where employers have been given a stimulus package and continue with retrenchment? Are you saying that that must be a condition? I just wanted to get it clear. And on OTA, I just want to understand what do you mean when you say appropriation bill has been the same for over and over years, whereas we have been passing the appropriation bill in each and every year. What do you mean by remaining the same? What is the same there? I want to go to African Farmers Association. Well, it has brought us it's an eye-opener to us on a number of issues that African Farmers Association has raised. I think it is proper as a committee to interact with African Farmers Association post this public hearing and to, you know, get into more other areas so that we have an understanding what is it seek to, you know, to address around the very important issues that they have raised today, especially with regard to the role of the land bank, which is something that has been very much prevalent in our discussion recently.
So
we need to move for review of the developmental mandate of the Reserve Bank. I mean the land bank, or what are you actually saying around that? Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for taking much time.
No problem. Thank you. Honorable Matafa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good evening to everyone who's part of the meeting. And like other members, I'd like to join in and appreciate the presentation. I think they are very helpful as far as our work. Chair, with most of my questions covered, I'll start first with the one of the AFASA and with relation to the funding and repositioning of the land bank. There's a question that I had for the land bank, and I think maybe AFASA might give in terms of assistance to new entrants into the agricultural space, as well as the small holding farmers. Given the impact of COVID-19, how best can the land bank, including government through the national fiscus, assist those particular farmers? And I agree with other members that food security is the responsibility of all the farmers. But I would like to underscore the fact that in the main, new entrants and small scale farmers pretty much in particular farmers. Our interest is to find out what advices can AFASA provide the committee and parliament in terms of how we can assist those particular individuals. On our water, Chair, our water speaks of spending money around analysis and development at local government space in order to introduce governance reforms. I'm interested to find out what reforms are they thinking about, because they are citing that this will assist in response to the AG's concerns. Now, I'm raising this question because at national level, the AG has been given an expanded mandate. Now, the question is, what additional...
Hello? Karen?
Seems like Mr. Matafa is disconnecting, Chairperson.
Okay, can I then request the Honorable Mlenzana to come in? When Mr. Matafa comes back, we'll take him back. Honorable Mlenzana?
Thanks, Mr. President. Just one question, Chair, because I am also partly covered by Honorable Kaiso on the question to AUTA. The concern by AUTA regarding the appropriations that they say it is the same. If that could be clarified, whether is it in terms of rent and spend or in terms of approach or what is it? Or are we seen to be rubber standing if AUTA could be, you know, outspoken? Then the one question to all presenters, Jefferson, would be, what is it that we could be advised of as the committee in terms of COVID-19? What is it that we should learn from COVID-19 as Appropriations Committee, particularly in terms of the allocation of funds? One would say, Chair, from where we sit here, the COVID-19 has actually exposed us to realities of South Africa as to what is it, the actualities of South African context have been exposed to us by COVID-19. If all of them could comment on that, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mlenzana. Honorable Matafa, are you there? Okay, yeah, I'm sure he's definitely struggling. Can I request Honorable Co-Chairperson, Honorable Mahlangu, to come in? Honorable Mahlangu.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Co-Chairperson, let me join the members who have appreciated and welcomed the presentations. Very empowering. And I think we just found ourselves as the select and standing committee very fortunate to have such rich presentation, not complaining, but identifying issues and coming up with the suggestions. Chairperson, because we have time limited, on I'll just highlight a few. Most of the issues have been covered. Has been covered by the other members who have spoken before me. On Justice Coalition, they've on slide 3 where they started, they're just asking right correction. Correct questions as to where does the money come from, how much is the money, who will actually provide the money, who will benefit. That overall as in value for money. I think those are the correct questions to ask. And they're also calling on us as the committee to support their views. And unfortunately, we cannot confirm that today, that we agree with your views, even though I'm saying you have enriched our views in most of the issues, or confirmed and agreed with us away. On slide 7, where you spoke about the transparency, you say it should be increased on transparency in as far as fiscal making is concerned. I just want to understand, and also on the public, as far as public participation, is public participation a problem in as far as the committee, or is it a problem in as far as Treasury is concerned or government is concerned, so that we can be able to know where intervention needs to be happening? Because as other members like Honorable Joseph have said, the issue of public participation, we take it very serious, because we are here because of the public, and if we in our work we don't involve public participation, we will not be doing our work. I will jump the others, Honorable Chairperson, in order to respect your time. I think the challenges that you are highlighting, these are real challenges. This is what we agree with you on, or what we have been highlighting as committees on challenges that we are facing as a country. On the issue of the public service, I don't know if you have heard me when I was presenting the report on DORA, that implementation of on this matter will depend on what you are driving in the PSCPC, in the bargaining council. To us as a committee, select committee and standing committee, our involvement or our influence thereof is very limited. We might say it's wrong, we might say it's correct, but the decision has to be taken there, because that agreement was made, or was came to an agreement, a decision was made at the PSCBC. Honorable members, I'm just happy that you are also, as you always do, highlight the issue of corruption. And like a day before yesterday, when we had this joint meeting, we were very, very, very hard on the issue of consequence management. And until there is consequence management, the public will not have that trust on us as public reps, and also on government. It doesn't help anyone or the public to have these processes that we are seeing, but at the end of the day, there's no outcome. There are no consequences. It's life as usual. So we want to see consequence-depending actions being taken place, being implemented. I think AUTA is empowering us as select committee on appropriations, Honorable Chairperson, because they are emphasizing and outlining this mandate that we are carrying as a Select Committee on Appropriations coming from COOPTA, coming from NCOP, the interrelations or intergovernance relations between SALGA, between provincial government and department, national department, is very important. And that's our mandate, that's our focus. So I really appreciate that we have that understanding with our stakeholders. Something also that got my attention is that the AG needs to audit all major public enterprises. For me, is that all public enterprises need to be audited by the Audit General of South Africa. Like, you are spot on. For a long time, SAA was not audited by the Auditor General, and we have raised this in the Feed Parliament as a Finance Portfolio Committee. It is wrong. It needs to be audited by the Auditor General, because these other audit firms, there are these other audit firms that are not credible enough. They are questionable, so we can't rely on their audit outcomes. Lastly, on AFSA, I think everybody has said everything correct. The members here, we appreciate what you're presenting, and even the tone at which you're presenting, which represents South Africa, is not discriminative. But I will encourage you to have regular engagement, demand those engagement with Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Land Reform, and also Select Committee in terms of the NCOP. Department of Agriculture, one-on-one, you need to have that, because you have such a beautiful presentation. And this presentation, we need to leave it. It needs to get to the relevant doors and the relevant years, so that we can see South Africa being a better South Africa. I'm just not sure though I might agree with you partially, that allocation of budget to agriculture is a matter of concern, since it is decreasing from what it used to be prior 1994. That can be justified, because it benefited a certain portion of the population and not everybody. But we cannot dwell on that. It needs to be corrected and balance the imbalances of the past. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Oral Matafa, are you back?
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Please finish your question. Are you there, Oral Matafa? Oral Matafa, I'm losing you.
Chairperson, am I audible now?
Try. Let's go.
Okay, Chair, I think I'll have to switch off my video. Maybe I might be audible, because I think it interferes with the signal.
Try that.
Okay, is it better now?
Yes, Ron Matav.
All right, thank you very much, Chair. No, actually, when I got caught, cut off, I was on the last point that you said in terms of the proposal on the tax brackets. And one of our colleagues, I think it's Honorable Kaito, did speak to the lack of participation of the private sector in the market in terms of economic stimulation, which results in, I would have wanted to find out if COSAT, we had done an analysis to compare our tax brackets to other like countries, particularly those that are emerging in Africa and in Latin America, to see how we are pegged against them, because I think it's Honorable Dutoit who speaks about the tax bracket already being overtaxed, and I seem to disagree, because I have seen instances where we actually are we are one of the lowest in terms of tax brackets towards the corporate space. So I wanted to find out what is the view of COSATU in terms of how we compare as far as other countries are concerned. That would have been my last input, Comrade Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honourable members. If I were to come in, let me start by appreciating all the presentations. we are at a better space than when we started about two hours ago. But before I proceed with my questions and my inputs, I would like to welcome Dr. Mampo Modise, Deputy Director General from National Treasury. So many people are with us here. Dr. Mampo, you're welcome. If at any time you also wanted to respond to the issues raised by the honorable members, because you could hear, or perhaps you could hear them raising issues around the budget. But let me jump to my questions. Let me start with Comrade Matthew. I just want to get a better understanding. What exactly are you saying about the Chief Procurement Officer? You speak about localization, and also you speak about expanding the role of the Chief Procurement Officer. What exactly are you saying? Because localization and centralizing, for me, talk to two different things. And tell me exactly what you'll be trying to achieve. And then related to that, okay, another thing that you are having, you talk about the cost of commissions, which is about 400 million rand to date, and you put that under the heading corruption. Do you want to tell us what exactly are you also saying there? Coming to AFASA, one, what do you think should happen or should be done to try and assist agriculture in general and black farmers in particular about accessing the markets, both national and international? Exactly, if you were to say, yes, we don't have, we need government to do 1, 2, 3. Can you please share that with us? I'll tell you, I once met the ambassador of China. He was still new in the country. I was still at National Treasury. He made a very a bold statement to me. He said, look, as China, we could buy everything that you produce. And needless to say, that would improve our trade balance and obviously impact positively on our GDP growth. But I'm just saying that exactly what is it that needs to happen that we are not doing for us to be able to access the markets, the international markets, one, but again, I'm sure charity begins at home, the domestic market. We have interacted with the land bank a week or two ago. amongst other things that we asked them was their or what they shared with us is the use of intermediaries. Can we get your response on that? What's your experience with them? What is their role? What is their impact? Especially as it relates to black and emerging farmers. You say the land bank operates like any other commercial bank. What does that mean? I know you spoke about some of the things that you think it should do, but you say it operates like any other commercial bank. So exactly what are you saying, and what's your proposal? How should it perform?
You are mutating.
Sorry, Chair, you're muted.
Oh, my apologies. I don't know what happened. What was my last point, as I can see? I think I was talking about the access to international markets. And what is it that is holding you behind? Then I jumped into intermediaries. Mm-hmm. I was saying, as a FASA, what's the attitude towards the use by the land bank of intermediaries and their impact on the black and emerging farmers? You said the land bank operates like any other commercial bank. What does that mean? And then coming to outer, you say we need to focus on the sitters, but you didn't expand on that. What exactly is happening? What's wrong about the sitters? And what are you proposing? And outer again, you say that we should be taking money from the departments that are not spending. What are you saying about the impact of not spending to the intended ultimate recipients? don't you think that we may be punishing people, that we may be double punishing people if we do that? I want to hear more on that. Yeah, I think I let me end it at that and allow you. You were very pointed that such and such a question goes to AUTA, goes to COSATU. Can you please take your questions in the order that you made your presentation? And please be aware of the fact that other people still need to respond after you. Can we start with the first presenter, which was Budget Justice Coalition? Ms. Kota, please pick up your questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. So firstly, thank you to all honourable members for the questions, many of which I think I will do my best that I felt were addressed, well, that were addressed to the coalition. I'll do my best to address. And perhaps just as a quick preface to that, I can imagine many of our coalition members that are listening are encouraged by the questions relating in particular to one, the public participation aspect, and secondly, for us to make substantiate our concerns and to highlight where we think some of these things might come from. We've engaged with enough committees, or certainly with the committee often enough, to know that this question was going to come. So perhaps to start off on that, and I'm hoping that by starting off on the question of where should the money come from and what are our thoughts in terms of solutions, we've made attempts in the written submission to make very clear articulations around where we think some of this money could come from, noting as well that, of course, we don't have the benefit of any of the perhaps treasury models in terms of both tax and revenue aspects, and so to some extent those are made blindly, but an immediate one and one that we make strongly in our submission is in relation to a wealth tax or the taxing of wealth, and so there are two areas that I'd like to touch on, and hopefully will answer many of the concerns and questions that are raised by Honourable Karim Okump and others, which is to say that we believe that a tax on the richest tiers within the country and private sector would be a meaningful solution and would be one that is less punitive on the most vulnerable, less punitive on the informal sector, less punitive and less deepening in terms of in inequality. So I draw on one particular study. So there are economists within the Budget Justice Coalition whose thoughts and research are within our submission. But in addition to that, the Southern Center for Inequality Studies at Wits University has also indicated that in their research, they estimate that if we were to tax, if the country was to tax 354,000 individuals, the richest, this could raise as much as 143 billion rand. And this, as you can imagine, is a significant, or equates to a significant proportion of the current 500 billion fiscal response package. And so for us, an immediate area would be for Treasury and for the South African government to really do some deep introspection about who we are taxing and why we are not taxing, imposing wealth taxes more liberally. The second aspect is that is around the savings, which I touched on very briefly, and it's to say that we are aware and perhaps again need to wait for the adjusted budget to see where these reprioritizations will be made. But savings around travel budgets, for example, even within the civil society sector, many of us are in a position now to look to, for example, use our savings within travel and accommodation, put those towards supporting data for community activists to join meetings like this. So we would imagine that the state and the public service would be in a position to do similar savings and reprioritize those, not as savings, but towards the economic relief package. And so that's another area. And we would imagine that there would be potentially some significant income from that. We also really welcome the question around public participation, and I'm very encouraged in particular by Honourable Mahlangu's reflection on that. And I think for us, many of the MPs I've noted raised this question about what is the problem with public participation that we are raising. There was also a question about why is the rating not 100 out of 100, and there was a question about who has done this research, where does it come from. Shared in the text box for MPs in their own time to have a look at, but the open budget survey is undertaken by the International Budget Partnership of these 117 odd countries, and in South Africa in particular, the Public Service Accountability Monitor is responsible for undertaking the survey, but also the survey is overseen and it's findings are commented on and rigorously overseen essentially by the National Treasury. And so the comments around this rating are not just a thumbs up from civil society, but in fact have been overseen as well by the National Treasury, which I know Honourable Chair will also be aware of, as will Dr. Modise, in terms of the rigour and the process. The questions are detailed and the documents that they include are also very varied, and I won't take too much time because I'd like to give other participants or presenters the opportunity to answer questions. But I think ultimately to answer the question about what is the problem and how should it be addressed, from where we stand there and the presiding officers in Parliament will have received various letters from some members of our coalition asking for even before this period, a much more greater investment in ensuring that participation of community-based organizations could be facilitated. I note that it is much easier for someone like myself to undertake a presentation like this than it would be for someone who has likely a solid foundation within their own constituency and as a representative of community-based organizations and movements. Easier for me than it is for them. And so one of the areas is to look at, even in the context of virtual meetings, what are the opportunities to enhance that? What is Parliament able, for example, to make open access to zero-rated platforms? Giving, of course, you know, we are aware of the challenges related to that. So the other aspect is, of course, in I say normal times, non-virtual, non-COVID-19 periods, public participation through the committees is also something that we have noted in the past is problematic, not only in the context of the legislatures and Parliament, but also in the context of the executive eliciting input from members of the public. So in answer to Honourable Mahlangu, it is also on the executive side, the Treasury and other line function departments to solicit input from communities. I will wrap up. The other aspect that perhaps just to touch on is I really appreciated the question which asked what should the committee, and I guess the question is broader, take from the COVID-19 context. For us as a coalition, it really... This is an opportunity that we felt we should not let go of, in the sense that it is an opportunity to influence change. It's an opportunity to better understand what does openness look like. So if we were to call, for example, to have the procurement information made open to communities, if school governing boards, for example, are able to see on within the entrance of a school what is supposed to be delivered to their school versus what actually has been delivered to their school, and who they can report non-delivery to, for example, that for us is an immediate win in terms of looking at transparency and meaningful engagement with communities after COVID-19. It should not be within tiers within this space, for example, to influence that. There are a range of others, but ultimately for us, it would be heartbreaking to continue in a space where we are still talking about people going hungry, and we are still talking about deep, deep wealth inequality, deep, deep poverty. I have a list of answers here, but I'm anxious that, given that it's 28 past five, to give others an opportunity to answer. But just to say thank you very much to the committee, and in particular, our submissions in relation to solutions we would be happy to make again, as well as our solutions or our ideas. I shouldn't say solutions because we don't have the answers either, but we have ideas. And the ideas about how to improve participation we would be happy to share with the committee, and are very encouraged by the questions that have come through. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kota and the coalition. In fact, I just want to say, if you, I know that you are pressured for time, please feel free to write to the committees your ideas around some of these things, and that applies to other presenters. I know I didn't give Ms. Kota time. Can we please try to collapse our responses to about 7 minutes? Matthew, it's your turn.
Okay, no, thanks, Comrade Chair, and thanks to the members for the questions. Yeah, I'll try to be to the point, but a lot of useful questions. I think to Honourable Ryder, yes, no, thanks for that. Yes, you know, as unions, we must always compliment where it deserves, but also clap when it's needed as well. I think on the productivity issue, Honourable Ryder, we've always been raising it. We think we need to invest in education to improve workers' skills, especially as we move to the fourth industrial revolution. We don't think the CETAs are up to scratch. There is a huge amount of wasteful expenditure and poor training there. If you can sort of metro rail, workers can get to work on time, companies can be more productive. If we can invest in workers' health, a healthy worker is a more productive worker. And look, we're keen on productivity to improve because if companies can survive, workers' jobs can be saved. One of the things that some of our unions do is to monitor government tenders. So our clothing workers union monitors all clothing and textile tenders to make sure it goes to local companies. We've had quite a few engagements, as members might know, with Treasury over this past few months around making sure that the PPEs, the cloth masks, are locally procured. So we tried to look at a win-win situation. We're quite involved in the DTI sectoral master plans as well, as trying to save the economy because our workers' jobs depend upon it. The Honourable Ockamp, no, we would agree with Treasury. We're in deep trouble. We were in trouble before the lockdown. I think on the issue of the wage bill, look, a couple of things, quite a few members raised it. One is that how government approached it was very unhelpful. To go to the Public Service Bargaining Council the day before the budget speech of Comrade Tito to say we're pulling out, it shows us negotiation in bad faith. They should have come to us in October last year and said, we're in trouble, this is all, let's discuss. We think we'd have found each other. But to go a day before the budget speech, withdrawal, not put on table an alternative proposal, it put us into a corner. To go to the budget speech at Parliament to say, well, workers are to blame for the crisis in government, for the crisis in the economy, yet not dealing with corruption and wasteful expenditure, which consumes about 10% of our budget every year. So it's a difficult thing. And to be honest, honourable members, our unions are not going to compromise on the existing wage agreement in all likelihood. There is negotiation taking place right now at the PSCBC. It's moved from mediation to arbitration. We're hopeful we will find each other. There is some movement with government towards coming closer to honouring the agreement. But also, I think, Chair, our unions are not likely to agree to renegotiate because they're also worried if you renegotiate a signed legally binding agreement in the government, it will set a precedent for private sector companies to also abandon agreements. So we have made proposals, and we think on two fronts we can help government. For the next three-year wage agreement, we've done our number crunching. We can find a way to save 160 billion rand because inflation has fallen quite a bit from 5.5% to probably 2.8%. We've also made proposals about how you can put a freeze on what management earns from levels 12 to 16 in the public service, even to do cuts there, but also especially the entities and the SOEs where there's a huge ballooning of the wage bill. You can have a sliding scale which protects the lower bands from levels 1 to 6, must be guaranteed inflation plus. In the middle bands, 8 to 11, must be guaranteed inflation. There is space to find each other, but it must be done in a constructive way. But Chair, just to give you some of the difficulties. So the public now believes that nurses earn about 200,000 rand a year who are providing an essential service, especially now, are to blame. Yet you have a CEO of the Mgeni Water Board earning 1 million rand every month. You have 800 managers at Eskom earning above 2 million rand. So to sell any compromise to workers, you must deal with the bloated management structures at top. Chair, I think also to Honourable Ockamp around Eskom, and I'm happy, Comrade Chair, because of time constraints, to share our proposals around Eskom. We have basically finalized our Eskom social compact at NEDLAC with government and business. It's a 35-point plan which deals with the bloated management, with corruption, with unaffordable contracts, with a just transition, etc. We've agreed that we must mobilize all public and private financial support for ESCOM. If ESCOM fails, Comrade Chair, we'll have no economy. Every single industry depends upon ESCOM, and we were losing many jobs in the mining and manufacturing sectors because of the unreliable source of electricity from ESCOM. But it's not a blank check. So we've said that PIC can invest, but it must be through government bonds where there's a return on investments. So it's not a blank check. And the conditions are the corruption, the wasteful expenditure, all of that must be dealt with. The last question from Honorable Okampo was around BEE. Look, as COSATU, we support BEE, we always have. Right now, but our focus has been about saving every single company in the country, whoever owns it, black or white. And we do recognize that Honorable Okam said that most companies are owned by white persons. Most African workers work for white owners. So we've not been keen on entering an ideological detour right now. We said we must save all employers. So the 40 billion rand from the UIF goes to any employer who has suffered a financial loss to make sure those workers can receive their salaries. We are quite worried, Chair, that the 200 billion rand given by government to companies, only 10% has been released so far. So that's quite a worrying part. Comrade Chair, I know the time is against us. I'll try to be very fast. To Honorable Karim, you know, we agree there must be trade-offs, and we're willing to find those trade-offs for the next 3-year wage agreement. We don't think government on its own can provide all the funding to grow the economy. The private sector has to come to the party, especially the banks and investment funds. It has to be done through impact investments. And we've really pushed on to the social relief measures that have come through so far, the UIF funding, the 40 billion rand, the increase in social grants. We've been also pushing at NEDLAC on the various economic relief measures that have come through so far. So also, Comrade Karim, the Alliance paper, actually most of the issues there were issues that COSATU had proposed. But we think from the stimulus plan, it has to be tightly linked to job creation. It can't be a blank check to employers. We have to look at a massive infrastructure investment, especially on key things like ports, rails, energy, which will grow the economy. But Comrade Chair, we need dedicated support to heavily affected sectors of the economy, like hospitality, retail, tourism, etc. But Chair, it also can't just be national government doing the work. Provincial government, local government, SOEs must do it. And you find in all those sectors, there are no job creation targets from them. Comrade Chair, I think for us also critical is local procurement. It's the banks making credit more affordable and accessible. And it's about tapping into international green funding. Comrade Chair, also at NEDLAC, we've been pushing the issue of the digital economy as a way of kind of releasing pressure on employers and growing the economy. But we also have to sort out the energy crisis as well. So I think those are the key things for the economy. And of course, we have shared our proposal with Comrade Tito and Treasury colleagues.
Two minutes, Matthew.
2 minutes. I think I'll have to put many things into writing, Comrade Chair, because there were so many questions.
Yeah.
Maybe just quickly a few issues. To Comrade Peters, we don't support early retirement. We can't shuffle older workers for young workers. We must create jobs. I think for us, that's a key thing. We'd want to see public works programs helping to create new jobs, not just being a source of cheap labor. So, for example, supporting the cycle. I think the issue of, around taxation, Comrade Chair, is to make taxes more progressive, lessen the burden upon working middle-class families, make sure the rich pay their fair share, make sure that SARS is capacitated, it deals with tax evasion, deals with customs evasions. I think to Honorable Mlenzana, around what lessons have we learned from COVID, was one is to capacitate the state, to deal with unemployment, to deal with poverty, but also the urgency of now. We must deal with these ticking time bombs and not just simply kick it down the road. I'm going to have to send you a lot of stuff on writing, Comrade Chair. If maybe to the last set of questions, Comrade Chair, which is from the Honorable Member Buthelezi, so I can't ignore him, about the Chief Procurement Officer. We really want to see the Chief Procurement Officer playing a central role in government procurement. It can help save costs, help reduce corruption. And you find often municipalities, provincial governments, SOEs, they violate all the PFMA rules. It is just simply a wild west what happens there. So we really need to see Treasury and the Chief Procurement Officer setting very clear framework guidelines to make sure to deal with that corruption there, Chair. The last point that you raised, Comrade Chair, was about the 400 million rand for the commissions. Our simple point there is that we support the commission's chair, but we haven't seen the NPA and the police implementing those recommendations or arresting people. And to give you one example, at ESCOM, there was 3,000 forensic audits, yet they've not been implemented. So there's no point of exposing corruption if you don't make those who have dealt with it pay the consequences. So let me stop there, Comrade Chair, and I can provide in writing because of time constraints, more comprehensive answers. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Thanks. Please do that, Matthew. You know we're going to interact again very soon. Can I ask Mr. Johnson to deal with his questions? 7 minutes, please.
Chairperson.
Yes, Honourable.
Just a second, Chairperson.
Yeah, can I?
If Mike, Matthew can, as he writes, can be more detailed. I've listened carefully. He was so high level in his responses. If you can dig deeper in preparation for our next engagement. Thanks, Chairperson.
Yeah, no, thanks. Please Matthew, do that. And I'm sure you are trying to deal with so many questions within a very limited space of time. So I think we will request that from all the presenters. Can I ask Mr. Johnson from Outer to also try and compress his questions to 7 minutes? I mean, his answers?
Sure, thanks, Chair. I'll take 7 minutes. The first question was from Honorable Peters, and just overall the questions are very constructive, so thank you very much, Honorable Members. The question was on the RAS bill and what our view is. So we didn't go into much detail because we haven't been doing focused work on this. I'll exploit this platform, Chairperson, and say our view is very strongly, and we have a strong view on auto as well, that there needs to be an emphasis on road safety as opposed to really just sustaining the government entity that pays out for road accidents. I think it would be much better spent if money were to be allocated to more police visibility and this kind of intervention to make sure that road accidents are reduced, to ensure that that liability is minimal. On Honourable Joseph's question, SOEs, which ones are profitable and which should just provide a general public service? If I understand the question correctly, I think I would like to provide that answer in writing. Chair, we are focusing on that question and we are doing that exercise, so I'll provide the committee with our thinking on that. So Honourable Kaiso asked, what do we mean when we say the appropriations bill has remained the same? I think the main point we would like to make is that since roughly 10 years ago or more, the debt burden on South Africa has changed dramatically. A lot of issues of governance. Yes, Jefferson. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, can you as well? Thank you.
Okay. The main point is that a lot has happened in the past 10 years or more in terms of debt and in terms of state capture, and we haven't seen the appropriations bill itself and its composition, really, where money is spent, hasn't changed significantly from year to year. We won't necessarily say that the committee is rubber stamping, but we do believe very strongly that the committee can have a stronger voice in how the budget should be adjusted. Also to say, when it came to the final blow in an extra bailout to Eskom, there were conditions attached to that special appropriation. We would like to see those kinds of conditions attached to ordinary appropriations, Chair, to make sure that these monies are spent properly. So I think we're just saying that there should be much more flexibility in how the appropriations bill really reflects change in real life from year to year. So Honorable Matafa asked about spending on local government reforms and what kind of reforms we would like to see. Chair, I think there's a long debate to be had about that, and I won't try and talk about all of it now. But in essence, we've been in discussion with the Auditor General's office as well, and there's a view that there can be much more efficiencies there. In rural municipalities that are very small, the CFOs can, for example, be reduced in number, but a single CFO would serve more than one municipality. These are the kinds of structural changes that we would like to see. The district development model has been spoken of quite often, but doesn't really reflect in the appropriations bill. As I said, it continues to look quite similar to what it has looked like in previous years. So I think also in terms of the issues that we're seeing where water boards are complaining about the role that municipalities play in really getting payment for services, and they're starting to bring in third parties to collect those payments. And we believe that the budget and the appropriations bill can better reflect if local government's role is being reduced or if it is being increased. We're thinking of direct procurement of energy from independent power producers. If metro municipalities are taking over the metro rail, then the appropriations bill should reflect that. The general question that was asked in terms of COVID-19, I think is a very important question. And I think that it really exposes the weaknesses of the public sector. and that really amplifies problems that we already had before. Thinking about the energy crisis, as Matthew spoke about, that really needs to be resolved. There are several issues that just can't be ignored any longer. And I think in general, there's space for change, and we would like that change to be inclusive. And I want to agree with the speaker from the Budget Justice Coalition that we would like to have budgets in their formulation to be more inclusive, to be more participative. And there are platforms that are being developed for that, but we would like to see that integrated with these public hearings. Then Honorable Mashlangu asked, who basically just made the comment and said, thank you that we are empowering the select committee and that we are emphasizing intergovernmental cooperation. And I think it's very important, Che, and I think we would like to, similarly to what the FFC said recently, emphasize that civil society should also be a part of intergovernmental fiscal relations, and that we really need to foster a stakeholder society. That at every stage of the budget cycle, there should be public engagement that is meaningful, that we can actually see how that influences what is ultimately decided. And the last question from you, Chair, on the CETAs, what is wrong is essentially what Matthew said. We think what is wrong is that there are contracts that are corrupt. We think that there is significant wasteful expenditure, and what the committee could do, in my opinion, is really to make the appropriation to the Department of Higher Education conditional in that it has to address these issues. These entities are under its oversight, and I think if we just give them money to hand over to these CETAs, then they have to make sure that that money is not going to be wasted. And finally, Chair, you asked on underspending. If we reduce allocations to those entities and organs of state that underspend, wouldn't that be unfair? I don't think so, Chair. We have very limited resources. We have very limited space to increase tax revenue. And when money isn't spent to good effect, I think that it can be spent elsewhere in organs of state that are actually spending it properly. Thanks very much for the opportunity, Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Johnson. I'll ask Afasa to come in, since Afasa is their maiden appearance to the committee. I think we'll be generous and give them 10 minutes. I don't think they'll be toy from Matthew when we do that. Afasa,
are you there? We're here, Chair. Thank you very much. We appreciate the time and opportunity for us to speak to Parliament around issues that were raised, and we also just in general accept the challenge of us meeting with the committee on a regular basis. We would actually await that invite, and also we'll also make some requests to come and discuss the matter with the committee around how we see the transformation in the land. But I'll touch on that matter in just a while. Chair, Honorable Raida is actually asking us about the budget and the markets. And I want to touch that, encapsulate the question with also the question that the chair raised about the market. How we view the process of dealing with the markets, opening the markets, the easiest way, Chair, from our office is that the state should be off-taker of the product from farms, as simple as that. If the state says, let me make an example. If the state says that we want a pork meat, we have hundreds members who are FASA, who are in the PIGAR. The quality and everything, you don't have to compromise on. We have the good quality of the product. You will get the good quality as stipulated in the regulation. So if you do that, maybe health department, Department of Education, Department of Army, and everybody else to say, we want to procure from the state, from the farmers directly. You can do that. That's as simple as that, Chair. We can come and discuss the matter, modalities on how that matter could be dealt with. I don't want to go through the details on that issue for now. All in a short way, I'm saying it may be easy for the state to procure directly from the farmer. In that way, you are enhancing the capacity of the agricultural sector in the country. That's the first point.
I'm a seated. Yes. We are cutting out to Western Nani. Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Yes, a food.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you.
Okay. No, thanks, Chair. With regard to the COVID-19, Honorable Karim, we suggest that when we deal with the supplementary budget, we could come and deal with that matter. We had made a presentation to the Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs and Rural Development on what we think is the best way of dealing with the COVID-19. We are glad to can forward that presentation to you and the document we have presented to the industry around how the state should intervene for COVID-19. And we will actually avail that document to you, Chair. With regard to Honorable Peters, we am representing, as we speak today, 9 provinces.
Go down. Want to see? No, we are going up. Oh. Want to see your face? Yeah, that's perfect. Don't change very fast.
No, I'm saying, Chair, that for purpose of the footprint that Honorable Dipuo Peters was speaking about, we are represented in 9 provinces. We have footprint of 360,000 members in the country. So we have substantial members, big and small, communal farmers, middle commercial farmers, and large commercial farmers. I'll come to that matter when I respond to the point that the Honorable Dwight dealt with. But we are spread in the country. With regard to helping the ARC, look, the ARC has actually worked with AFASA and our commodities, specifically the grain commodities. One of our commodities, maybe before I deal with that matter, we have 6 commodities in our organization, Honorable Dipuo Peters. The sugar industry, both of South African Sugar and SAFDA are members of AFASA. SAGRA is a grain, one of the biggest in the country, black grain organization is our member. We have a NERPO, it's a red meat association, it's our member. We have a AGRA, which is a wildlife organization or union in our stable. We have a deciduous fruits, it's our member in our organization. So those are the commodities that I'm speaking about. We have about other study groups, we call them study groups. There's a process of approving the commodities in our organization. We have a poultry and piggery. They are also the biggest in the country, and horticulture. So we have those as a footprint in the country. But coming back to the point that I was dealing with, is that ARC, Honorable Peters, has worked with the AGRA, has worked with the SAGRA, South African Grain Association of our organization, to develop a new cultivars of wheat in Eastern Cape. So that's the interest shown by the state to help black farmers. But the amount of money that allocated for ARC is mega, it's minimal. And that's why they are unable to spread the wings in terms of research and helping for the assessing the cultivars. And that's the point that we made. To make agriculture smart or fashionable, AFASA's view is that it's important to reopen agricultural colleges in all the provinces. If you don't do that, you are missing out on the opportunity of young people seeing the importance of agriculture. By the way, you must remember, honorable members, during our times, you were forced to go and study agriculture because you were forced to study agriculture to be an employee. And that's why many black people were resistant to being in the agricultural sector. In the present conjuncture, it's important to revitalize that situation, re-energize the process. And AFASA has actually worked with a different organization. For instance, we have worked with the grain industry to say, what is that you can do to fund the education post-grads for black farmers and black students in the industry so that they can have an appetite to participate in that space? So that's one of the things that we are dealing with. We will be glad to engage with the committee around those matters. Here. With the Honorable, is that Juba? Look, the obstacles for inclusivity. Remember in 1996-1997, the government adopted what we call it a deregulation process. That deregulation process, the unintended consequence of that has barred
black people to participate in agricultural sector. For instance, what the land bank used to do prior 1997, 96, they had the credit board where there will be a cushion for farmers, particularly white farmers, to be protected when they are unable to pay their money of the loans from the land bank. So what you say is that it was a good thing at that stage. Let's reintroduce back to accommodate black farmers, because that will broaden the scope and enable the inclusivity of black farmers in that space. So that's the point that we're making here on this issue. Yes, we are speaking for entire farming communities, black and white. But specifically here is that you cannot start a race at 100 meters and then suggest me I start from zero. And you say, let's race. White commercial farmers are generally being helped by the regulation. The deregulation process is one of those things. In 1933, the state consciously developed a program and processes to help white farmers. So there's nothing wrong for us to do that. It's not exclusivity. We say embrace, because we have done that. And those white farmers who are prepared and ready to help work with the black farmers, let them come to the party. As we speak today, it's 25 years, 26 years after democracy. I can ask honorable member to say what those trainings have been done today. Many of black farmers are not financially viable, despite the assistance that the honorable member is speaking about. So without going to that space, we are farmers.
We ask you
members to help us in that space. Honorable
Taylor. Yes, Taylor. You're already on injury time. Okay. 2 minutes.
2 minutes, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. We are suggesting that on the intermediaries, Chairman, on the intermediaries, black farmers have not been helped by intermediaries by land bank. The land bank has actually used the intermediaries by and largely to fund white commercial farmers. Black farmers have not been helped with this thing. You can check the records. They have their own stats. Our proposal is that amend the Land Bank Act to enable us to get participation for development of black farmers. One of the critical things that you can do is to amend NAMC Act, Landmark Act, to help with the marketing of this issue. So there are many other regulatory frameworks that we can deal with. The questions were many, Chair. I can't deal with them, but I can respond to them. We as AFASA, we can respond to them to you in writing.
Thank you so much, Mr. Masitela and AFASA. Dr. Mampo, 1 minute. Do you have anything to say? No. All members, thank you very much, and the presenters, and our apologies for pressing you with time. It's the manner in which we are meeting, so we're allocated a specific time. But we've requested you, one, please, in writing, educate us on some of the things that we have raised, all of you. But I think I want to, Mr. Masitela and AFASA, you know, a nation which can't feed itself is not worth the name. So I think all of us here, before we came here, with something to eat. So it's one area that we can't be found to be wanting on. So I'll be making a proposal to the honorable members that we must still engage with the farmers in general, and AFASA and other farming organizations included, because we are making a strong point that farming generally is now being underfunded. And I think we need to follow up on that. And if farming is being underfunded in general, it's worse with the emerging and black farmers. I think that's the point that we are making. And we are happy that at least, as I said, it's made an appearance before the two committees that we have started the process. Also, thank all the other presenters. We always engage with them, and we must still engage going forward and make sure that, because there's a lot of wisdom which we got from you. With those few words, allow me to thank the honorable members, the media, and everybody, the staff and everybody who attended. Thank you very much. And that will take us to the end of the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
And very well done to all of the presenters.
Yeah, bravo to them. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
When I logged in, you might have been earlier, but you maybe you logged in and went away again.
No.
Okay.
No, I was here, but I was making my tea.
You see, that's another thing. Can police, I think, yeah, okay, Mom Kize, we need to start now. The time that